Laureen Gilbert is a financial advisor with and securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC.
8:01 on a Wednesday morning, and you know what that means. We're going to get the full scoop, the skinny, the actual facts as to what happened yesterday. In for the WealthWise moment, the award-winning president and CEO of WealthWise Financial Services, Laureen Gilbert. Welcome, Laureen.
Good morning, Ed. Great to be here, and how timely.
Oh, I know.
Yesterday's market.
This could not, I hate to say it, but it couldn't have happened at a better time. I love having you on the morning after something like that we experienced yesterday. Thank you for being here. I know you've been traveling the country, and as I was telling you off air, I love your dedication and the fact that no matter where you are in the world, you're calling here, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So do our listeners.
Happy to be here. Yeah.
So yesterday we saw stocks tumble, and it was the worst day since back in June of 2020. What happened?
Yeah, well, you're accurate about that. It was a terrible day in the markets, and it was a reaction to the CPI number that came out. And we knew all eyes would be on that number and what was happening. And of course, that's an inflation indicator of the basket of goods. And while we had hoped that we had really reached a peak inflation, this was a tiny bit higher on a year-over-year number than the previous month. So what's interesting is the reaction on Wall Street was not about the number directly. The reaction on Wall Street was all about what does this mean for the Federal Reserve? Because we know that they are hawkish. We know that they've been talking about perhaps another 75 basis point rate increase after two back-to-back 75 basis point rate increases. And so while the market had started to price in 75 basis points as the next rate hike, what this number told us is that not only would it be 75 basis points, you know, most definitely, it also raised the probability that the Fed goes in with a 1% rate hike. More importantly than all of that, it tells us that it's going to be a while before the Federal Reserve is going to pause. So the markets had been hoping that we could kind of line out this path of 75 basis points this time, then maybe two more 25 basis point rate hikes, and then maybe a pause. But what the CPI number tells us, after the backdrop of Jackson Hole and the Federal Reserve making it clear that they are standing at that 2% number of wanting to get back down to 2%,
right,
it's going to take a lot to get there. So it dashed the hopes, and it's repricing stocks again, saying, you know, the prices of stocks have not been accurately forecasted based on this continued Fed rate hike situation.
Okay. Now, I have a theory, and I'd like you to tell me why I'm wrong with my theory. If I am, in fact, wrong, you might agree with this. I don't know that you will, but tell me why I'm wrong.
The big rate hikes
that we've had so far were intended to cool inflation, and they haven't yet. Is it because we mistakenly assume that inflation is being driven by wage increases and not other things like, you know, companies maximizing profits?
No. It's because it takes a while. There's a lag from the time of rate hikes to it actually hitting into the economy. And that lag, it doesn't happen immediately at all. So as much as we'd like it, the Fed would like it if it happened immediately, they're trying to raise rates in a way that it doesn't shock the economy so much that we immediately go into a recession, right? So that's the idea behind, you know, these rate increases, keep putting them into the system and then seeing how it takes. But there is a lag, and that lag could be, you know, 6 months to a year for actually that to take effect and actually come into the economy. The other thing I want to point out is the CPI number had some really good things in it. Gas prices had come down 10%. That's significant. The problem is other areas continued to go up, like food. and shelter, which we know. We knew shelter was going to be an ongoing issue. That's the lagger, you know, that's going to take a while. But the food cost increases continue to plague us. And so, you know, that's a problem.
Right. And we were talking, the very first segment that I did this morning was about the food costs spiking. They've spiked over 11.5% or almost 11.5% over the past year. And that's the largest annual increase since back in May of 79.
Yes. Yes. And so here's a couple things I want to point out. We've got a Federal Reserve that's trying to bring down demand and tighten money supply. But we've got a federal government that is still handing out money, and that is actually contrary. That is inflationary. That is continuing the dynamic. And so the problem here is that to bring down inflation, we have to stop handing out money. We have to stop with tax credits. We have to stop with all these things that continue to add to the problem of inflation. If, in fact, we're serious about bringing down inflation.
Or
what is going to happen is the Federal Reserve will have to double down even more to contradict what's happening.
Okay,
I'm in Washington.
I'm going to push back on your handing out money thing for just a second and say that this morning I'm reading that the share of children in poverty fell by nearly half last year. And that's thanks to mainly that one-year enhancement of the enhanced child tax credit, which I hope we don't consider handing out money.
No, I'm not really talking about that, Ed. I'm talking about what just was passed in the Inflationary Reduction Act, which is actually inflationary, not reducing inflation. Because if you read it and you read what that's doing, that's more money coming back, that's more tax credits. It has an agenda behind it. But let's be honest. And, you know, the honest truth in that is that's inflationary. And I'm not saying that as a political statement. I'm saying it as an economic statement.
Okay.
That you cannot continue to have these kinds of tax credit and the idea of handing out money, and I'm referring to the new things that have been happening at the federal level that is in fact contradictory to what the Federal Reserve is trying to do. So I'm just making that as a comment and saying that if we're serious about bringing down inflation, then we're going to need to stop doing things like that. Or, like I said, the Federal Reserve will have to take even greater action, which will be, as the Federal Reserve said, painful to consumers and businesses.
And staying on the Fed right now, some economists are warning that the ongoing Fed rate hikes might risk crashing the housing market. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, well, that's intentional. Not meant to crash it, but meant to significantly slow it down. And that's working. It's what it's going to mean is houses for sale will be on the market longer.
Right.
It means that housing prices will also adjust downward based on rate increases going up, because that's all an affordability question. And so it's making affordability harder for people. It's going to make people think twice about selling their home, because if I sell my home, wait a minute, I have a 3% interest rate, but if I buy a new home, it's going to be 5%. You know, that's like, no, I don't think so. So it's definitely going to change the housing market. And while I don't think it's, you know, it's certainly not designed to crash it, nor do I think it will necessarily, you know, we're talking about a significant slowdown is what I would say.
Okay. So you were just recently in Boston. You just landed late last night from Boston. Give us some insights that happened, or insights that you learned about.
To remind people who may not have known, while I was in Boston meeting with portfolio managers and understanding what they're doing on their funds and their ETFs and how they're investing the money, and for us to get a really good idea of not only what they're doing with portfolios, but their thinking behind what's going on in the economy. And, you know, some of my comments that I just made just a moment ago all came from that meeting in Boston. But here are some things I want to point out, because what happens after a day like yesterday, and of course like a market like this year, is investors say, and I just was talking to one of my clients yesterday, she's like, you know, I don't know that I want to put any money in here because, you know, all I see is my account's going down. And I said, yeah, certainly that is true in the shorter term. That is what has happened. However, if we take a longer term view of where we are, here's what is working right now. When you have inflation higher, and in fact, you know, back to the comments, while it may not have exactly peaked, we are in that peaking phase. We're definitely in that peaking phase, and we're seeing areas go down. It's not going down as fast as anyone would like, especially the Federal Reserve. But it is, and it will go down. It's just going to take a while. So with that, where do you invest your money? So having this value-oriented approach on stocks works well in an inflationary environment. It also works well going into recession, and it works well coming out of a recession. So focusing on value stocks that pay dividends is a way to kind of react or be proactive with where we are right now in the economic environment that we're in. The other area on the fixed income side is floating rate. And floating rate are companies, when they need money, we know that they can issue stock, they can issue bonds, or they can get a loan. And when they get a loan, what happens is they go to a bank to get the loan, but then that loan is securitized and sold in pieces. And that is called a floating rate. And as investors, we can invest in that. We have been using floating rate in our portfolios because when rates are going up, what happens is that note is based on a variable coupon. And so as rates go up, so does the coupon rate. So that is very attractive as that happens. And so right now, an area to be looking at in fixed income, if an investor has not already looked at it, is floating rate, because as rates go up, that coupon is going to go up for them as well. Now, you have to be careful, because in a recessionary period, there's also defaults in that area of the market. And so, but that's all expected. That's an expected part where they expect the loss, and what they know the parameters of what those losses are, but their coupon is so high that they can recover from those losses on the recovery side. But just something to note there. So and then, as I've been saying and was reiterated, really having a domestic approach overall in your allocations. And then I do want to speak to, Ed, what the risks are that I don't think have been priced into the market yet.
Okay. Please.
The biggest risk right now is that coming into the fall and then the winter, and the issue of Russia and Europe is still unresolved, right, on where and how they're going to get the energy that they need. And that means that we could end up with a crisis in the winter that shoots up oil again. And as we know, oil has come way down, but the big risk is that oil could spike again. And that is not priced into the markets right now. And all of this puts us on a shaky path, right, from here. And I think that investors, we need to really be considering that we know we're in a slowdown and eventually we're going to go into recession. The other thing that has not been priced in is that I think we're going to see analysts revising expected earnings, and they're going to start slashing them. And we're going to hear a lot of this in the next quarter as from companies. They're going to be slashing earnings estimates. So we had a good, you know, solid earnings season this last quarter, but that's also going to start to deteriorate. The question is it just deteriorate slowly, or do we hit an earnings cliff and we see an earnings cliff?
Well,
Can I stay on Ukraine and Russia for just a second here?
Sure.
If either way, now Ukraine in the last several days have made incredible gains and pushing Russia back, regardless of what happens and how well Ukraine does on the battlefield and in taking territory back, the feeling that Putin and Russia will try and punish Europe by holding back on oil and holding back on natural gas, is that something we can already kind of predict and plan for 6 months down the road?
Yeah, and that's what I'm talking
right.
about. I think that if that happens, we're going to see an oil spike again. So we don't know what's going to happen, but it
we may as well plan for it.
We need to think about it for sure.
Okay, I was talking.
Absolutely.
I was talking to someone the other day, and I made reference to once again, as I've mentioned before, I don't want to embarrass you, but as I made reference before, it's like having the best surgeon. You want the best financial advisor on your side, who, when everything else around them is going crazy, they maintain their head. So that's thank you again, there, Laureen. I really appreciate
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, and that is the reason to use a financial advisor. And then it's not any financial advisor. You've got to, pick hopefully a good one.
Right.
But definitely, because the thing is, people left to their own devices will make poor investment decisions. And it's nothing about their intellect. It's about their emotion.
Right.
And the smartest people in the world allow emotion to get in the way when it comes to their money. So having somebody who's objective and can give objectivity and keep that level head during difficult times and times of crises is paramount to having a successful investing lifetime.
Yeah. You've got the stamp there. I've got to be honest with you. You have the stamp. And you just made the perfect segue into my next question. Elon Musk, who's been fighting tooth and nail to get out of his deal to buy Twitter, now we're finding that the vast majority of Twitter shareholders voted in favor of the $44 billion takeover deal. What's going to happen there?
Well, I think it's going to be in the courts because he's trying to get out of the deal through court action, while the shareholders would be happy for it to happen. So that is still to be determined because, we'll see what happens. But shareholders, are making the right decision for their stock price, right, of what they want to see as far as the purchase price, whether Elon will be able to get out of it or not. That's going to be a court decision.
Okay, and is it if he is forced to make the deal or whatever happens there? What we saw that they opened Tuesday, the stock price was $41 a share, and that's almost 25% below the deal price. Mm-hmm. Mathematically, what does that mean?
Well, this is merger arbitrage is what you're just talking about. And we actually invest in merger arbitrage situations.
I love that.
Because eventually the stock price becomes the purchase price.
Okay.
But in between this time of a deal announced and a deal closing, there's risk of it not happening, just like we're seeing here. And so if it happens, those two prices will come together. And if it doesn't happen, just like we saw before, it could be hit, even more. So there is risk there because we don't know which way it's going to go. But there are investments that can be made in this greater idea of merger arbitrage because if we use a portfolio manager to do the deals. It's a fund that we invest in. And with that, they're capturing on a lot of different M&A deals. Some of them go through, some of them don't. And they're capturing just a few percentage points on each deal with the idea of each time making a little bit of money and then some of them not working. But overall, you end up, with something. It's what's interesting about the whole idea of merger arbitrage and investing in it is that it is considered an alternative investment. And it's not correlated to the overall equity or fixed income market.
There is nothing cooler than learning stuff on a Wednesday morning and merger arbitrage. I'm going to be the smartest guy in the room the rest of the afternoon. Laureen, where do our listeners find you?
wealthwisefinancial.com or 949-748-1177.
And before I let you go, I've got to tell you the thing I miss the most is this morning I do not have biscotti in front of me. That was the most amazing biscotti I've ever had, and I'm not kidding.
I'm so glad you got to enjoy it.
Well, not only that, but I was forced to save a slice. You brought me several slices. I was forced to save a slice and give it to Anne-Marie, and she's now sold on it. My God, everybody, you can't touch it without loving it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laureen. Laureen Gilbert, Wealthwise Financial Services and the Wealthwise Moment. She is the award-winning president and CEO. As always, Laureen, thank you so much for stepping in the door today.
Thank you.
All right. 8:22 the time. It's the Mornings with Ed Show.